Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, welcome to the 308th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Ryan Godoy, Ryan Lagarde, Ryan Kindle, and Ryan Moulton. I'm Matt Enloe.
And I'm Oren Kaplan, and today we have an episode all about Ryan. Just kidding, but that would be great. I do want to shout out Ryan Moulton specifically. He has been a patron since April 28th, 2018. Pre-COVID.
I hope you're still listening, Ryan, and that this doesn't remind you to turn off your Patreon.
Yeah, I'm sure he's not listening. But Ryan Godoy is listening. He's been a patron since 2019, also pre-COVID.
Not bad, not bad.
50% of all Ryans who are patrons to our podcast joined pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic. When do you think we'll do a live show?
That's a great question.
I feel like in the summer we might be able to.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know, I'm jinxing us.
Patreon.com/justshootitpod if you want to support us. If you want to be a Ryan. Go to patreon.com.
You don't have to be named Ryan to support our Patreon.
Ideally, you would change your name to Ryan.
If you are named Ryan and you are listening right now and you've been thinking about subscribing to our Patreon, now is the time.
Can we also get some mats? We need a few more mats as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, patreon.com/justshootitpod. $15 gets you a Just Shoot It podcast hat. Let's get into the show. Today, we're going to talk about preparing for a meeting.
A Hollywood meeting. And also working outside of your wheelhouse. We both have kind of been able to stretch our wings a little bit recently, but the last project I just did had all sorts of stuff that I don't normally get to do. And it was a real treat, but also poses the question of like adjusting your approach and figuring out how to tackle different challenges.
Matt, you have been preparing for some meetings.
I have indeed. And you had a big fancy Hollywood meeting just recently as well.
Yeah, I would say on the scope of Hollywood meetings, it was not big. It was probably like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is like you're meeting with Spielberg at CAA to see if he wants to produce your feature film. And 5 is maybe some agent at Paradigm wants to potentially rep you. Mm-hmm. This was like a 3.
Before you even tell us about the actual meeting, I'm curious, what are the signs that you were in a big meeting versus a smaller meeting?
Well, I guess there's a couple things. There's the stakes. Like, what are you meeting about? Is it a general meeting, which is just like get to know you? Mm-hmm. Or is it, are you meeting on a specific project? Mm-hmm. You know, when there's a project, I think it's bigger than a general. Like, hey, let's meet. Mm-hmm. When you are in the position of power all of a sudden, that's the best meeting.
That's a different deal.
But it's a rare, rare meeting.
Can I say that at my time at Comedy Central, when I was doing development, the likelihood that a person had a true understanding of the size of the meeting, of the importance of the meeting, was almost always nil. Unless you were very famous person, unless you were like Chris Rock pitching a show and every executive in the whole building was all there for the meeting. Generals can be like the backdoor interview to doing a pilot, or they can be a throwaway meeting. Pitches can be throwaway meetings, or they can be huge. It kind of leads me to like the thing that I think is maybe the most helpful, not the most helpful, but a thing that you can do is in terms of preparation is like just a little research on all of the people who have been CC'd on the meeting calendar invite to figure out who those players are, but also to not be disappointed or surprised if more people or fewer people show up. We're talking right. assistants. We're also talking other executives. All of those people are in the mix. And sometimes their boss is like, oh, hey, Oren, you need to go join Matt on this pitch. Or sometimes you're like, I'm really slammed. Can you cover for me?
And in that situation, you're listening to pitches. You're not pitching.
Correct. Yeah. You and I are the executives in that
right.
Role play there.
Adjacent to that thought, you asked like what makes the meeting big or small. I think the kind of general thought is if you're meeting with 20th Century Fox or Universal Studios or NBC or Judd Apatow or, you know, Shonda Rhimes, that's a big meeting. And if you're meeting with your friends that have a production company that might want to help you with your proof of concept, mm-hmm. then you'd think that's a small meeting. But in my experience, the exact opposite has been true in terms of actual results over the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Like that small production company that helps me make the proof of concept ends up getting me way more traction than my meeting with, you know, the producer of Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a little bit of a crapshoot because sometimes those meetings can really pan out, which kind of goes back to my point that like it's rare that the person taking the meeting really has a complete understanding of who the decision makers are and how far down the line they are. Because also, like, you know, just because you're pitching to people who are junior, those people can vouch for you and say, you know, I really love this meeting and I think we should read it and pitch it up the ladder. You know what I mean? Like, there's always the first step is always going to be somebody kind of on the junior side. So don't let that discourage you when you see an intern and, you know, Matt and Lo in his 20s.
Right.
You know, because he was hungry, you know?
Yeah. You know, our friend Ken Fuhrer, his assistants, his interns, basically, when he worked in development, were the Stranger Things guys.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait, both of them?
Yep.
That's weird. They're like, we intern together as well. That's so strange.
I mean, they're like a team, you know, I don't know. It's not that strange. They interned at this company, Bonafide Pictures, which made Hamlet 2 and mm-hmm. Cold Mountain, some really good Steve Carell movie that I'm blanking on. Oh, A Little Miss Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing, and if you really want to get an excellent rundown on why it's important to have meetings and stay in touch with people, you should definitely listen to our Natalie Metzger episode mm-hmm. because she walks us through, you know, she's a producer of features mostly. She's also a writer and director and does a lot of other things, but she walked us through a few movies that she produced and how she met the directors on them. And, you know, all of them were directors that she knew before the project existed. Mm-hmm. And so the value of a meeting, even if you don't get the job or there is no project, is that you are reminding people that you exist and that you tell them kind of the type of stuff you're into. And you hope that a project that they have lines up with you and maybe they'll call you. And that's personally how I get a lot of work.
Yeah, 100%.
On the directing end, even like in the commercial world, in the episodic world, in the promo world, and in every part of the world, it's just so good to meet with people and let them know what you do and what you want to do. I mean, there are definitely bad meetings. You know, there are meetings mm-hmm. where you don't quite get along. There's like some friction or you just are totally unprepared, which we'll talk about shortly. But in general, keeping your name out there is super helpful in terms of getting jobs.
Speaking of, and I think we'll dig into this a little bit more, you know, we were mentioning how generals are kind of the most amorphous. Have you ever been on a general where all of a sudden you realize you're kind of soft pitching a few ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think most generals are like that. And I do think that, like, you do get way better at meetings the more meetings you have. Mm-hmm. I mean, as obvious as it sounds, I can think a lot of my first general meetings when I first got repped and they were like, oh, you should meet this person at this studio or this production company. I would just go and meet them and I didn't have any. They'd be like, what are you into? I'd be like, I don't know, Seinfeld? You know, like,
mm-hmm.
I had nothing ready. But
What's the deal with general meetings?
Yeah, I kind of learned, like, oh, this company makes, like, I met with Gunpowder and Sky once, mm-hmm. you know, that company mm-hmm. or a couple times, I think. And they make kind of like lower budget, small studio, like genre films mm-hmm. and some sci-fi stuff, some comedy stuff.
And when you say lower budget, you mean in the like
the $5 to $15 million.
I think they're somewhere in that zone. So like, honestly, now like
I mean, it's
awesome.
It's a
sounds great.
Awesome budget for me, but low budget for a studio.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know, if you know you're going to meet with a company like that, then you have your, like, actually, like your movie, you know, mm-hmm. ready to tell them about, and maybe you even have a lookbook or you talk about some casting. Or you can even offhandedly mention, like, oh, you know, I'm working on this project mm-hmm. about this weird scenario. It's like really about responsibility, but it takes place in, mm-hmm. you know, this on this alien planet, whatever it yeah. is.
To put a pin in this part of the topic, meetings can change and evolve and grow, and so you kind of have to mentally be prepared. And the more you know about the people you're meeting with and the company and the things that they make, the more informed and more prepared you can be to kind of throw the things that you do at them in a concise way. The question, and I've talked about it on the show, but it's been a while, the question that I'll always get at a general is, what are you watching right now? Or, like, what's your favorite movie? And mm-hmm. both of those questions are always, like, just a softball for, like, tell us what you like so that we can make the thing that you like together.
Or so that we can see if we are
compatible. See if we're compatible. Yeah, yeah, exactly right. And so, you know, I've got a hit YA web series comedy under my belt and a bunch of sketch comedy. And I come from Comedy Central. And when they say, what's your favorite movie? Don't say Alien.
Right.
Which is
the piano.
Maybe my favorite movie. Say Fargo, even. Just say Ferris Bueller. Say Ferris Bueller.
Okay, I will. Thank you. That's yeah. pretty much the answer to all meetings.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, like just saying like a thing that kind of is applicable to the story. You can say, wow, boy, I love so much. I'm really, I'm a huge cinephile, but I've really been interested lately in thinking about X, Y, and Z is a way to take that. They just want to see that you're engaged, basically.
I remember when Ken, again, my friend we mentioned, was working at Bonafide, he would get these like random tips. Like, Natalie Portman's looking for a comedy to star in. She mm-hmm. hasn't done much comedy, you know? And sometimes you end up meeting with those actors' production companies, you know? Like Kevin Hart, LeBron James, like those two guys are making like 100, you know, projects right now.
Kevin Hart's making everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And so. It is interesting to just go in with some sort of angle. And I mean, like what you're saying, like, what's your story and why are you right as a partner?
Mm-hmm.
But so I think that that's kind of interesting about generals. And again, you know, we're talking about it in the scope of Hollywood, but I do think that counts just as much if you are a director in mm-hmm. the Midwest and you meet with a production company. The idea is
yeah.
not that you need a job and you want them to hire you, or that you're the greatest person in the world and they should hire you. It's more like, oh, you guys are making, mm-hmm. working on adventure stuff. And I love adventure stuff. And this is actually, I went camping last year and this crazy thing happened to me and it would be cool to make a movie about this. And finding those connections is what those meetings are all about, whether it's in Hollywood or outside of Hollywood.
Well, and I think that if you do the homework of knowing the people that you're talking to a little bit and don't get locked in, because who knows, they could be like, yeah, I know we did sci-fi, but actually our bosses just said that we're a rom-com house now, you know, be ready to pivot. But it's more about just kind of being concise and clear with like what your point of view is. Even if that is a major pivot, it's okay to be like, you need to be authentic to yourself, right? So it's not like when you go to Gunpowder and Sky, you only pitch the things that you think are 100% in their exact
right
zone.
guns and airplanes,
powders and sky. You know, you put your own twist on it for sure, because that's why they're meeting with.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So obviously, you know, the obvious places to go before a meeting is to the company's website, mm-hmm. see what they made. Go to IMDb Pro, see what the production company's on.
I would say IMDb Pro is the first place I would go.
Yeah. And you want to see, and don't just look up their company, but also look up the people mm-hmm. that run the company, because maybe they were a producer on a movie, but not the company doesn't have a credit. You know, they all came from somewhere.
The other thing I would do, and it's less effective now, is I would go on Facebook and I would see who our friends in common are.
Right. Well, so I was going to ask you about that. So then you start the person, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, mm-hmm. Instagram, whatever. Obviously, Facebook does a great job of showing you your social connections. LinkedIn shows you like your business connections. But how creepy is too creepy? Like if you go into the meeting and you're like, hey, I saw you went to Michigan, you know, go blue. My cousin went there. Mm-hmm. 1997. Do you know them?
I think you can make a joke about like, I did my due diligence. I looked you guys up. Of course, you know, mm-hmm. like I'm thorough.
Like that vacation in Tahiti was.
Instagram is personal. Instagram is, I think, a little weird. But I think in Hollywood, like, again, Facebook is like so old school now that it's so uncool that it's not really valuable anymore. But it was nice to just be like, oh, I saw that you and I have a couple friends in common. I love so-and-so. You can make an educated guess about the clump of friends you have in common oftentimes. Like you all mm-hmm. know them. They're all production people. They're all people who went to the same college. They're all people right. who party at the same house that you used to hang out at. Whatever that social connection is, you can infer a lot from like the types of friends. The worst is when you get like a really strange smattering of people from all over your life. Mm-hmm. Then it's not especially helpful. But yeah. like most of the time, there's a trend that you can suss out, basically.
Okay, so you have this meeting, you've done your research. I feel like it would be helpful to talk about maybe some specific meetings that we are having recently. Mm-hmm. The new trend is obviously to have these meetings remotely. Who knows how much that will change and when that will change. But
can I say the main upside to that besides avoiding traffic and stuff?
No pants, I know.
No pants, it's great. No, I love having people's names on screen.
I find it difficult sometimes at home. Like there are certain times of the day where my camera looks good and other times of the day where it looks really bad because of where the sun is, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. kids, dogs, all those things.
Can you not upgrade your lighting setup? I feel like
I can. I just like, I don't want to move my computer. I just need to change the camera. I just need to change the camera, like get a webcam.
I think this is good advice for people. Video conferencing is here to stay. Get a decent setup and get a decent background because it is important. You know, I'm in my garage right now. I don't take any client-facing meetings in my garage.
I might have talked about this a while ago, but my friend Julie and I, we created this show that evolved into a podcast that is kind of this YA podcast about this girl in high school that grows wings. And we built this entire world around it, and we recorded a pilot episode, like a pilot presentation. And then COVID happened, and we kind of abandoned it. But somehow it got into the hands of someone that worked at Audible and they said, hey, you know, we saw your deck. It looks really compelling. Let's meet. They hadn't actually listened to the pilot presentation. They just met us off the deck and someone had recommended they mm-hmm. meet us. And we had a phone meeting. This was Thursday. And I said, okay, Julie, this weekend we are going to get together. Mm-hmm. We're going to prepare. It started out as a TV show and turned into a podcast. So the elements we had are obviously the characters. We know the audience, who the audience is really well. Julie and I both worked at Disney on like tween stuff and vampire stuff and like magic stuff, fantasy things. So we had our story down pretty well of like why we're making this and why we're excited about it. And we had the story of the world down pretty well, but it had been like literally 2 years since we really were deep in it. So we weren't super fresh. And I was like, okay, we're going to get together this weekend. And the weekend happened. Everyone got busy. Tuesday rolls around and Julie calls me. And I almost ignore her call because I'm in the middle of like working on some other project. And then I look at my calendar and I'm like, oh no, our meeting is in 15 minutes. We literally have not talked since the last time when I was like, oh, we got to get together. So
yeah.
Now we have to have this meeting in 15 minutes on a project that we literally probably don't even have time to review our own deck that we made 2 years ago before the project. But luckily, and this is just not a humble brag, just a brag, but I have so many calls on commercials where I have to like be excited about other people's work. And just, I've gotten to a place where I can kind of steer the conversation to the stuff I want to talk about and avoid the stuff that I'm not super good at talking about. And so I think our call ended up being really good. He asked us about if we would be open to attaching producers like the producers from Twilight or producers from The Hunger Games. And he talked a lot about the marketing at Audible. You know, there's so much audio content and it's just very helpful if you can say with this star or I think even better with the producers or writers or creators of some other big YA fantasy property. And literally all they would have to do is like, you know, read our scripts and give us some notes or whatever and allow us to use their name. And obviously they would get compensated for that. What's funny is Julie and I, it's not like we're in the same room. It's not like we can look at each other and be like, are you okay with that? Are you okay? Mm-hmm. We just have to, we're kind of showing all our cards on this call.
Could you text one another or no? Did you have like a side?
We could have. And that's, you know, in the commercial world, that used to happen all the time. It's a little harder now because we're
video.
On video.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people can see if you're not paying attention. And honestly, like getting a text mid-pitch really throws me off too.
Yeah. It's really,
and it happens a lot.
Terrible because people are trying to like help you or like pitch a solution or.
9 out of 10 times, if I get a text during a pitch from someone that's on the call, I know they're telling me to like stop talking.
Yeah.
Cause that's when I'm nervous. I just like, I over explain and over pitch and I'm like, oh, or we could do it like this. Or I saw this thing and this is awesome. And
I think you and I both suffer from the challenge of being more technical than most other people on any call ever. And so our ability to explain how we are going to solve a problem can oftentimes be very boring because we get into the specifics in a way that no one, if they cared to know, they would have they'd have a different job.
I also like, if I'm not getting a reaction, I try pivoting, you know, which is not always a good idea because then I'm just over pitching. I'm like, oh, you know, I thought we could, like at the end, we don't know who the killer is. You know, I thought that would be cool and it would start a conversation online and there's no reaction. I'm like, you know, or we could tell them who the killer is. I think that would be cool too. You know, that's the problem I have.
I think that the thing that you hit upon that's the hardest part about all of this is that gaining traction is the name of the game. Part of it is that there's so much stuff out there, so many pitches, so many ideas that are well presented from really thoughtful, smart writers. And so oftentimes executives are just looking for something that helps the project cut through the noise that's not creatively driven because they're just drowning in great material all the time, you know? And so saying things like, I would be really helpful if you had an executive producer who had a track record in this genre is a differentiator. It's a way of saying like, hey, this great show also came from other people who made shows that you love, you know? And so it can be frustrating because it's like, sometimes it feels like it's deflecting. Sometimes it feels like, oh, well, you don't know what's good or, you know, just stand behind something you believe in creatively or whatever. But like the truth is those people have to sell the project to people higher up and higher up and higher up. And at a certain point, those people are no longer creatives.
Yeah. The guy literally told us, he said, every week at Audible, we have a meeting and everyone talks about the projects they've found and they have to pitch them to the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said, your project is exactly what we're looking for right now. Like, no one is making podcasts for like 18 to 25 year olds. And we know that it's like a big market where we have, like, I think they're tied in. They have some tie in to like people that listen to music, but don't have a lot of content created for mm-hmm. them. And so he was like, you know, this is an easy pitch from like a demo, like genre, all that stuff. He's like, but what would really give it value is if I could attach a name. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about this is that he said he actually knows the producers of Twilight. So mm-hmm. he almost was like, he didn't quite offer up his own connections, but it sounded like that would be an avenue that we could go down. Now, so my question for you, Matt, is he had not listened to our pilot presentation that we had made. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of caveated it with, I was like, look, it's not like perfectly sound engineered and everything. It's kind of like our initial thought of how to set up this story. You know, we're really excited about this and mm-hmm. the world, but from a production standpoint, this isn't like mm-hmm. super polished. So I'm just giving you that. And he's like, oh, great. Yeah, I'll listen to it, you know, over the next week or two. And so that was like 2 weeks ago mm-hmm. and we haven't heard back. When do we follow up or do we not follow up?
I think you do follow up. Here's the hard truth. Most of the time when you're talking to an executive, they have other things that are going to end up pushing your project lower on their to read stack. There's going to be hot stuff that's coming in. Their boss is going to be like, oh man, so-and-so just came out with an awesome podcast or an awesome screenplay or the Blacklist just dropped or whatever. So even though they really did want to get to your thing and they're not intending to be hurtful or rude or whatever, they just, things pile up. And so what's tricky is that your point of like, oh, they'll reach out if they like it is true, but also sometimes it's helpful to give them a little nudge to remind them, because it could have just literally fallen so far down the stack that mm-hmm. it just never gets read.
For sure. And I feel like even getting the meeting, I think it might have taken us a couple times to schedule it. So I can see that happening. Even when we spoke, there wasn't like a lot of urgency. There was more of a, you know, this type of thing is what Audible is trying to do right mm-hmm. now.
Well, and what we're talking about, again, certain executives, I think, have really strong creative instincts and can say, this is great. Mm-hmm. And that just takes experience and time and passion. And those are the good ones. But for a lot of them, it's really kind of a guessing game. Things are subjective. Screenplays are hard to read. And so no matter if a person thinks, hey, this creative is great, or if they're like, I think this is good, but I can't really tell, no matter what, they still have to have that other thing to sell the thing up the stream. So a good executive can be like, this is great, and I know exactly who I should take it to package it up and make it happen. I know that Natalie Portman is looking to do comedies, and this is right for Natalie, and I know her manager super well, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the job of a producer, of an executive at one of these companies. But it's pretty darn easy to be like, you know, I read a bunch of scripts and I liked them.
Yeah.
And that's that. And then you still have your job and you didn't put your neck out on anything. And your bosses can always come in and say, well, you know, Steven Spielberg really wants to do a podcast, so we're doing that one. And then you work on that.
Right. Yeah. But I do think, you know, if you work in development, like there is a lot of value you get from bringing projects to the company.
100%. But it's still, mm-hmm. still, those people just need ammunition,
right,
to actually get it sold.
Yeah. And I do think, like, thinking back on it, that was his point in that call is like, hey, I like your idea. You're making the type of thing that we would buy. Mm-hmm. Please help me figure out.
Give me how something I can sell it. Right. Exactly. So
I'm telling you what it's missing.
If you were like, hey, you know what? I reached out to your pals. I mentioned that you'd read it and that you were interested and that you could be right for it, and they really want to do it, then you're off to the races.
That is an interesting point. Yeah. Or even if like some interesting cast member you can get to and you can point that out. Yeah. Well, so I want to say one other thing, like specifically about our meeting, which again, it, I don't know that I would call it a pitch meeting. As the guy had already read our deck, so he kind of had an idea of the world and the tone. And I think that a lot of new writers and directors and filmmakers, their instinct is to go into this pitch with this document where it's like, hey, here are my characters. Here's the world. Here's the arc of season one, of season two. This is how I feel like a lot of new filmmakers are like, and there's such an opportunity for guest stars. You know, every episode, a different person can get into the Uber or whatever, some dumb idea. But what I find and what I learned, I think, from like pitching commercials and stuff is like, I think what's much more interesting for them to hear about is why you're excited about this idea, what purpose you think it serves, like what's missing in the world that this fills the hole of, like what people it appeals to. And you can definitely talk about the story and you talk about the genre, but I think like turning into like, oh, and then at the end of act two, this thing happens. And the end of act, you know, like then there's this twist and the catalyst is this and that. And like, I think it's pretty laborious to listen to, you know, I'm sure when you were at Comedy Central, someone like pitched a whole pilot and to you and you were like, I'm kind of falling asleep.
I mean, that place was so talent driven that it was really like, oh, we love your point of view. How can we turn that into a show? Which is kind of another version of what you're saying. You have to be a decent writer. You have to have great ideas. All of that stuff is, those are the prerequisites to even just get into the building. And they're either going to read the pilot or they're going to read the treatment or whatever the follow-up material is. So to your point, it's like, why is this interesting is what's important. And really, what we're saying is like, what are they going to say to their bosses in the follow-up meeting when they go around the room and everybody talks about the projects that they read? And it's really good. It doesn't mean a ton. But like, Oren, it's really good. They actually already have some talent attached. It's a pretty hot piece of talent or something, like they would say something dumb like that.
I mean, it can even be something as simple as like, it's based on this viral video he made that got like 100 million views, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Traction.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
And so I'm curious now, kind of that's my point of view. We'll see what happens with that project. I'm definitely not waiting, like hanging my hopes on it, but I like that this project that I kind of had forgotten about, you know, kind of came back to life. And I do actually think it's a really fun world and a really fun project. And I really enjoy that genre and working with Julie and stuff. So I really hope something comes of it. Maybe we'll follow up with this guy later this week. But I'm curious about your project, especially in the context of what I just said, which is like pitching the script is probably not always the most fun thing to listen to. You have a script, you have a feature you've written, you are taking meetings on it. You are trying to get it made, attach cast, attach producers, attach money, attach a studio or production company or whatever makes sense. How do you pitch it? And like how much, I'm assuming there's basically two scenarios. You're either pitching it to someone who's read the script or pitching it to someone who hasn't read the script. Tell us about how you approach that.
You can slice it up even more than that, because I think that I'm in the stage right now where a company has read it and really likes it, and we're working together and putting together materials, right?
But this is a company that needs more companies to make the movie happen.
Correct. Right? Correct. Yeah, yeah. Which is often the case. So, you know, it's unless I was like pitching, you know, Warner Brothers, they wouldn't. And even still, often at this nowadays, it's like there has to be more buy-in, especially with TV. But I'm going to have to pitch this thing, God, 50 more times to different people, right? And yeah, I found myself kind of trying to think, like, what are the things that will make this bulletproof? And in what order do I try to accumulate the different variables that make it even more and more substantial? Right. So right now the film doesn't have any money, doesn't have any distribution, and it doesn't have any stars. Right. Which is complicated. Right. So the thing that is appealing to an actor is different than what's appealing to a production company or what's appealing to an investor, right?
Right. And that's why I think a lot of times nowadays, like pitching to actors might be more of a first step. I think back in the day, like even 5, 10 years ago, you'd be like, well, I need money to make an offer to an actor. But now I think what appeals to some actors, maybe not as the money so much as the role or the script or the genre or something they haven't done before, something they're perfect for. And if you can bring them along to the money people, then it's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, I think that that is true, but also actors don't want to just say yes to movies that aren't going to get made, or they're not going to even bother entertaining. You know, like actors know what sort of value they bring to the table, and that is finite. Do you know what I mean? If an A-lister does a handful of bad movies in a row, they're no longer an A-lister, right? And so, and also they have a barriers of protection that keep different types of productions from even getting to them, right?
Yeah.
And so it is a little bit of a chicken or an egg thing that can be frustrating. And also it takes them a long time to read, mm-hmm. you know? And the brutal part about making offers to actors, you know, they have busy lives, and you can only offer one of them each role at a time. So this is the challenge of attaching talent versus for equity investors or just general investors or production companies versus not, right? Is that you go to one of these companies and you're like, okay, well, I've got this person, and they go, who? And then you go, well, they were on this show. And that show, and they're like, oh yeah, I heard of that one. You can be aware of a show, and they could be like the lead on the show and still not be famous enough to move the needle, quote unquote, for companies if they're not, frankly, fans of that show. Or if there's not right. some objective sort of star meter, essentially.
Right. Tell me about kind of your upcoming meetings and what you're doing to prepare for them.
I have been really frustrated because I've been in, I can't tell you how many projects that were like backed by studios and didn't go because you get into this game of naming an actor and then them saying, you know what, they're not famous enough. And then we name another actor and they're not famous enough. And before you know it, you just slowly through attrition end up with like, oh, you literally only can have the most famous people in the world in this streaming series on this new platform that hasn't launched yet. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to do that. So I have a few strategies. Well, partially I'm writing roles that I think are really appealing to actors, not unlike the way Josh Rubin was really aggressively like writing things that would be really appealing to actors in so much as that they're strong, they're powerful, they're not underestimated, they're unique, and that I'm looking for performers who have perhaps been overlooked in the leading role, for instance, or aren't often depicted in this way, which is kind of a sweet spot. So to your question about how am I preparing, though, in the last 6 months, I've been really like copywriting a ton of different commercials and decks and like pitching on all sorts of different advertising campaigns. And the thing that we're constantly talking about is the hook. What's mm-hmm. the thing that's going to grab you and make an audience want to watch? And we talk about it in the context of the commercial, right? Or in the first act or in the cold open as writers. But that also boils down to literally every single page.
Human interaction.
Yeah, truly, truly. When it comes to like pitching, I know you were making a joke, but that is true. Like why explaining to someone upfront and explicitly in all marketing material or all pitch material, on this page, we're talking about the style. Why is the style interesting and why will people keep watching? Grab their attention. That's true for every single page. And so that's a thing that I've been reevaluating about all of the copy that I've been sending out to people, basically. And so that goes for the love letters on the offers I'm sending out.
When you have a meeting with the potential financier, production company, studio, whatever, what material, I mean, obviously you have the script, but what other materials do you have prepped for the meeting or do mm-hmm. you not, or is it just a conversation?
Yeah, so this is interesting. I had a really great lookbook that I was super proud of that I sent around to a lot of different producers that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's solid. It's, you know, there are a lot of skills that commercials give you, and making a lookbook slash treatment is at the top of that pile. But what's interesting about it is that I found that it was trying to serve two different purposes. It was a lookbook and also a pitch, and those are not the same things. A lookbook is like a way of conveying tone and creative vision. Mm-hmm. And a pitch should talk about financials. It should talk about like the way people are going to make their money back, or at least the commercial viability of a film. It should talk about the way things are structured. It should talk about the team members, all of that other stuff. I've split them up into kind of two different documents, still giving the pizzazz of the treatment writing and the lookbook sort of design skills that I have for that I've been honing, but making one more business and one more creative.
Do you go through that book with anyone on a call, or do you just send it ahead of time or send it afterwards? How do you use your materials?
That's a great question. I do go through it with people, and I'm sure you can relate, Oren, but I think that I am the most critical and zeroed in on it. I've sent that lookbook to, I don't know, 30 friends, and I've gotten unanimously positive responses, most of them being like, oh, this is like one of the best lookbooks I've ever seen. And there's one detractor, my commercial rep. She's like, look, I've seen 1,000 of these, and I'm gonna like hear
about
my notes.
Your feature lookbook.
Mm-hmm. yeah she was like, look, I've seen a lot of lookbooks, here are the ways in which you can make it better. And she's the person who's seen more lookbooks and more treatments than any other person we know.
What should people at home do to prepare for these meetings? I've had meetings in the room where mm-hmm. you're like, oh, these people are into it. We show them something. A lot of reps are like, no, don't bring a slideshow. Don't bring it the video. Don't bring mm-hmm. It's just, you're going to have tech issues. It's going to be a problem. The streaming's not going
to
work.
They're right. It goes back to my point, though, before, and your point, really, that those meetings are most frequently about personality and point of view. And then the creative, look, when it comes time to really sell the show to like studio heads, yeah, maybe go ahead and bring that stuff. But like those early meetings are always going to be like, hey, let's reconnect with Oren. Soft pitches, Oren. Great. We love it. Make sure you send those materials along. Have the great materials. But like most of the time, they're so informal that it would be sweaty to show up with a PowerPoint presentation. And I say that because I've done that before and lost the job.
Right.
And also been in the meeting where people come in
with the PowerPoint.
With a PowerPoint, and it's like sweaty.
Yeah. But I've sold the show off a proof of concept video. We just showed the video at the beginning just to give them some context.
Sure. Yeah.
And they're like, can you have this show done by April? Literally after the video. And I was like, should I still pitch you my part? Like, you know, we had the whole thing scripted. It was like three of us. If it is something that makes your pitch better, that helps you be confident, I'm not saying necessarily PowerPoint, but you have an image you want to show or something that you'll be wasting time describing, you know, mm-hmm. then that's good. But yeah, like I think I agree with you that most times the materials will get in the way of your personality. But if your personality is not good in the room, there is on occasion the materials speak for themselves. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a very specific type of pitching, and it's a bummer because, like, you know, being good in a room and being good at writing and being good at directing and being good at show running are all very different skills. Show running and being good in a room, there's a lot of complementary things, but like there's a lot of great writers out there who are bad at pitching.
Point is, just do obviously whatever works for you, and you probably won't know what works for you until you've done 10 or 20 meetings.
Yeah, and don't take it too hard if you don't stick it. And also, sometimes when you stick it, you still don't. Some of my best pitches I haven't sold, and some of my like fine pitches I've sold.
Yeah, and terrible. Just some obvious things. Practice your pitches, pitch to your friends. Have people come online. If you know, if you have a really important meeting,
mm-hmm.
practice before that meeting. And also when it comes to scheduling meetings, if you have three meetings, I think the general rule is to take the meeting you care the least about first. I was wondering, though, if you have a second to endorse something with me.
Oh, I do.
Unpaid endorsements.
All right, so I got a funny one. So I have a new baby, and before that baby was born, my wife and I both stopped drinking, her out of obligation and me out of solidarity. And as a result, I started drinking non-alcoholic beers. I tried a variety of different ones. There's a beer called Partake. You can get them at BevMo. There's a handful of good ones out there, actually. There, you know, if you go to BevMo into their non-alcoholic section, most of them are solid. Partake is 10 calories. Most of them kind of live in the sort of IPA, like pretty hop forward sort of world. Like, it's hard to find a good non-alcoholic lager because, like, the flavor is subtle enough that it just kind of tastes watery and shitty, or and kind of just like an IPA anyway. So just get an IPA or whatever. Here's the thing. It's awesome to be able to like pop open a nice cold beer and like have it at lunch and not worry about it. Like, it's nice to have, I had a burger or I had some tacos or whatever. The best thing to wash down a handful of those different meals is a beer. But there are many instances where it's inappropriate, or like you just don't want to live that life. Like, I don't want to drink a beer at 5 p.m. on a Wednesday sometimes. And this gives me the same sort of satisfaction of like, oh, I love this flavor. I'm giving myself a treat. It's not just water or LaCroix or whatever.
Well, can I ask you an annoying question?
Please.
How many calories is in this beer that's doing nothing for you?
10, bro. That Partake is 10 calories.
Okay, sold. I'll have 10.
Yeah, dude. That's what I'm saying. Partake beers, they're available at BevMo. Athletica is also a good brand. Kaplan, what you got?
One is, if you're making a spec commercial, make sure to find like an animated version of the logo when you put it at the end of your commercial, because I think it makes like a huge difference to see that there's kind of some design and thought behind how a logo comes onto screen. I'm working on a job right now. They do not have an animated logo, and I feel like it looks low budget. My other thing is, I'm just going to double down on this app I endorsed already called Polycam. I am just using it on every single scout. You need to have an iPhone 12 or 13 or better. You need to have LiDAR, or you can use an iPad Pro. You can scan any set. I would pay for it. It's like $5 a month or something. I paid a year in advance. You can export OBJs, you know, you can export your model into any 3D program, Cinema 4D, Blender, whatever. More importantly is, you can measure everything on the set in the app. So for the set, I just scouted this kitchen set that we're going to shoot at, and we want to replace these cabinet doors. The production designer's like, oh, okay, I'll see if I can get over there. And I was like, you don't need to go there. I scanned the entire set. I can measure anything you want. And so I measured the doors. You can measure like the size of a counter if you need to replace a door. You can measure that door, especially things that have kind of standard sizes, like a cabinet, like a sink, like any part of the furniture, a doorway. So Polycam, P-O-L-Y-Cam. I love it. Now it's like my go-to tool that I can't live without for shooting things. Okay, well, thanks for tuning in, folks. We're going to get some guests on soon. We got a lot of people that want to be on the podcast. But if you have any thoughts on things you want to hear, things you do to prepare for a meeting, we'd love to hear from you. Our email is justshootapod@gmail.com. Just write to us and tell us you listen to the podcast. That actually makes my day every time we get an email like that. You can find us across all social media at justshootapod. You can go to our website, justshootapod.com. You can follow me across social media. I'm at okaplan. On Twitter, I'm at smightypyleg.
And you can follow me at Mr. Matt Enlow. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. Great work. And you're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.